Dude, this shit is so good.
Hop water. Haven't
It's,
you brought that up before?
yeah, but this one is made with the same hops as that, you know, Stone IPA. They use the same hops as Stone. So when I drink
Ooh.
this, it's like I'm drinking a Stone IPA. And I swear to God, man, it's so good. And it's just water. It's all it is water.
I'm drinking water too. I'm gonna have to try that.
It's 0 calories, 0 sugar. If anything, there's vitamin C. There's 120% vitamin C in each serving.
I'm looking at my Aquafina right now. It doesn't even have the nutritional facts. That makes me trust it more.
I mean, that's good. Water is good for you.
Yeah.
But this is also water. Welcome to Know Your Rights, a music podcast from two guys who know just enough about songwriting to start a podcast about.
Follow Rob
and Colton
as each week we dive into a different band or songwriter and discuss what makes them great,
okay, or otherwise.
Music is law.
And we know our rights.
Ready?
I mean, it's Sunday at 2:30, so we have no excuses.
That's true.
Welcome,
everybody, to the Shady 80s. Colton coined this phrase. I'm rolling with it.
Shady 80s. Did I do that? I forgot.
Yeah. Guess who's back?
Man. Yes. Oh my God. I'm a little disheveled because of what just happened before I started recording.
Oh boy. Yes. So I was getting ready to start this off the proper way. You know, I am Rob. He is Colton. And today we're going to be doing 1998's That Don't Impress Me Much by Shania Twain. And Colton starts asking me, like, what is that? What's that? Is that a piano at that part? And I'm like, I don't remember any piano in this song. You were listening to Feel Like a Woman.
Yeah, it's sometime between, by the way, yes, my name is Colton. And we have had a bit of a break, not kind of a break, kind of not, because we've been posting old episodes. We did come back and do Glassjaw, Worship and Tribute, up now.
Yes.
Very good episode. Please check
I think
it out.
So too.
But we've had a number of things go on. I've been moving, still kind of moving. And during that span of time, about a month, I think it's been, since you told me what Shania Twain song we're doing, my brain.
About a month and a half. So you can add an extra 2 weeks.
It's, and my brain was like, you know what? It's, man, I feel like a woman. And like for the last like week and a half. And here's where I'm a little bit relieved is I kept thinking, Rob's going to be so happy to talk about this song. And like the times I've listened to it, I'm like, man, this song sucks. Like the more times I'm like, man, this song really sucked. And I've been like working hard today to find things to say that could, cause like, you know, that song's fine. It's done. It's very successful. So whatever, but like, what can I say to, I'm not like so salty coming into this. But I was so mad at so much of it. And like knowing that we're listening to That Impressed Me Much, I'm like, oh, it's like that and Still the One. Or like the ones where I'm like, I wish we could have done these.
We're actually doing Still the One.
Which is the best of the three to Colton.
It's close between two of them. Yeah, Feel Like a Woman. Good music video.
I did it, man. And I prepared for that. I did. I like, I was talking to my wife about it. I was getting like perspective of like someone who was like a younger girl at the time. And, and like, I was like doing all, I'm like, I'm going to be so good coming into this, but this is good. I feel on my heels, but I think that's when I tend to be the most ineffective. So that's good.
That's when the claws come out. That's for sure. But I mean, I can just cover the bass right now. The best part of Feel Like a Woman is that opening guitar riff. I mean, that bam, bam, and bam, I like it.
Man, I'm so loaded for bear. Like, I could go off on that song. Like, that, like, weird synth they do alongside it. That's like, you know, when you're like on good, like, GarageBand and you're looking for an effect and you hit that, like, it's like the club, like, wah, wah. That's the effect they use on that synth. And I was like, then they chose that. That's terrible. And the chorus, the reason I was asking is it's like a it's like a staccato keyboard, but it's like they do a reverse sound on the keyboard, and it's like a strobe light for your ears. That's all I could think of. And I had that locked and loaded, man. And now
I'm gonna take your word for it because I did not listen to that
because that's not the song.
That's not the song we're doing.
Anyway, the theoretical episode that just happened in my head was pretty good. So
you made a lot of really good points.
Thanks, man. Yeah. I'm so sorry. This is great.
Well, we still got plenty more on the docket here.
You mean the actual docket, not the actual one I made up.
Yeah, so we're doing My Name is Jonas by Weezer.
I was going to say, now I have to check all of our correspondences. I feel like I've dreamed episodes now. What is happening and what is real? Also, are the Dodgers still losing?
Oh, I thought they were up a minute ago.
They were not. Yep.
There you go, Coors Field, dude. The balls just fly out of there.
No, not when the Dodgers are up, apparently.
You know what? I'm sure we'll be fine.
Very minor sports talk. I don't think Roki's got it.
No, Roki's not looking good. And in fact, I got to bring up, there might be a Know Your Right sports talk curse.
Okay,
we're still going to do sports talk, everybody.
I wasn't
going
to bring this up.
Dude, the day we recorded the Glass Jaw episode, Luca and Reeves go down.
Right, like that, and literally hours after we finished, and you were like, this is it. This is...
Yeah, well, on the plus side, we can keep recording. We don't have to put up old episodes. But not only did that happen, we both also praised Mookie Betts.
Yeah, and he's out.
And then now also an oblique strain, and he's out for, probably like a month longer? I can't remember the exact amount of time.
Obliques are bad.
Yeah.
I say having watched sports... and never hurt my oblique. That part of my body is not what I'm aware of. I know it's the entire side of your body, though.
Yeah,
basically.
Yeah, I don't get pains there from physical maneuvers.
Neither of us, I think, have done anything that would strain our obliques. Our obliques are.
I mean, sometimes I sleep wrong, you know, and then I wake up and it's like, oh, I probably should have stretched before I went to sleep.
Typical oblique injury.
Yeah. But you know, Kim, he's had some great plays at short, and Miggy Rowe, you can always rely on there.
It's very good. I mean, I'm like annoyed at a potential series split in Denver, but it doesn't mean anything. Nothing means anything. I don't know. I am in such a happy to be here mode. Like, I'm on the other side of a week of just insanity that my life is like slowly rolled around, and I'm still not done. And yet I'm talking to you as if I am. And I'm just happy to see your face, man. And I'm happy to face, not be talking about me. I feel like a woman.
You know, I've tried calling you. This is very common for this podcast, everybody. Colton doesn't answer his phone. So if he would have answered his phone once over the last 2 weeks, could have nipped this in the bud.
I don't know. I feel like I just would have been like, so you're liking the Shania Twain song? And you go, yeah. And I'm like, yeah, me too.
At the end of the Glass Jaw episode, I say, like, everybody, like, get ready for Shania Twain, and then you redirect the conversation to where I was going to say, get ready for Shania Twain's That Don't Impress Me Much, but I just get Shania Twain out, and then Colton just rolled with the first thing that he saw on Apple iTunes or whatever.
This is very on brand for me, where I can go back and go, oh, yeah, Colton. You're overly conversational, but just screwed yourself up. No, we are in good shape. I'm happy to see you. And I'm very sorry that the Lakers are down.
It makes you feel technically
better. The Warriors are out.
Yeah, the Warriors are out. I was proud of them for taking care of the Clippers because, you know, little brother, it's always nice to see the Clippers get eliminated. But technically, the Lakers are up one in our series. So well on our way to the finals.
My guy. I need you.
I'm reversing the curse right now.
Is that why you have an LA Kings shirt on?
Well, the Kings are in the playoffs as well. I'm not a huge hockey fan, but you know me, I'm a homer. So I've been a Kings fan very casually.
I've had and I haven't even had this conversation with my wife. I've just had my own like personal confessionals where living up here, I have dabbled in considering watching the San Jose Sharks and like the arena is right there. I'm guessing hockey tickets are way more affordable than most, but I have decided personally that I need some essence of other hobbies and interests that don't involve following also a team that feels extremely troubled from the outside in. It's hard to get in on a team like the idea of the bandwagon. Mm-hmm. Right. Which is like, if anyone online who's expecting a music podcast, bear with me.
It's coming.
If you are getting in with a team when they're winning, you're a bandwagon fan.
Yeah.
But I guess so the honorable thing, if you're going to start liking a sports team, if you didn't grow up liking a team, is to get in on them when they're losing.
Hell yeah.
Which is not fun.
Just like a podcast. Get in on a podcast while they're losing. For example, today could be the day that you get you, in.
You are getting in on the ground floor. We are not yet winning. Although I have to tell you, man, I was showing Casey the numbers that we've had. And one, we had like, I don't know why I'm sharing this now. This is like but we don't have like stats meetings, but we had our most like listened to week since like the first year of our podcast last month.
Yeah, probably last week. I was like, I haven't really looked at our numbers. I was pleasantly surprised. Like, hey, people still for some reason tune in.
And like spiked in like a crazy way. Yeah. And here's my question, loyal or I don't even know, loyal listener. Why are you listening to us in the nicest way possible?
Yes.
Who are you?
In the most confident way possible. Why are you actually listening to
us? Who are you? And the reach we have internationally is also befuddling me. I saw some really cool countries, some of which I had to look on a map to remind myself where they are. And if you are listening to this podcast from a country other than the US, hello.
Welcome.
And please email us.
What countries? Maybe I know how to say hello in their language.
Give me a sec. I want to bring some up.
This might perfect. Be a little I'm going to look up ways to say hello in other languages.
Get ready, buddy. It's going to be bananas.
All right.
Bulgaria. These are one time listens. If I went through all countries, I think it would be way too long because we have a ton of countries.
It's probably 195.
We have Bulgaria, Albania.
Hey,
Bulgaria. Latvia.
Hey.
Are these how you say hi in these languages, by the
way? I'm sure that they're probably bilingual.
Guatemala, Dominican Ola. Republic, Lebanon. Ola. Word up, Lebanon. State up.
Yep.
France, Greece, Jamaica, Finland, XK, which I don't know what that means. XK. We had one listener from Japan.
Konnichiwa.
Thailand, Nigeria, Ghana, Peru, Senegal, Ethiopia. We had two, by the way, from Palestinian territory occupied.
Oh, wow. Well, I hope we're helping you through.
Persons. Keep listening to some good tunes. And here's the thing. I don't know if this is like a bot that just runs through. Do you have a bot? Did we set up a bot?
I have not set up a bot.
Through different countries? Okay.
Dude, think of the effort we put into this podcast. Starting a bot would probably be a smart move.
It's a wild thing. And I have to take a moment to appreciate, I don't know when these people listen. I don't know who you are, but if you found this podcast and maybe you're in a place that's really difficult, or maybe you're just relaxing. It's nice.
Learning English. We're here for you.
Maybe that's what it is, in which case we're so sorry, but we appreciate you.
He is an English doctor. He can help you through this.
I mean your bilingual, your multilingual skills are keeping this podcast afloat.
I believe I got three different hellos in there.
And the sports talk especially.
Yes.
I'm just like, what's going on here?
For people, everybody, go Dodgers.
Go Dodgers. Around the world. I think that's why people started to listen from other countries. They're like, this is a Dodger podcast. I'm almost certain.
We love Shohei.
So I did give us new, I know we had a name for this segment.
Song Spotlight?
Song Spotlight. Beautiful. Well, I think these episodes are Song Spotlights. I don't know what we call this first segment song.
Oh, that's right. This first segment, something new.
Man, we are killing it, everybody. Hello.
Why not? Welcome.
Welcome. If you're unaware of, oh, by the way, I set you up for an email.
I whiffed it. Sorry.
That's okay. But if you would like to tell us to do a better job, which we will definitely try.
Tell us where you're from. Tell us what got you into the podcast. Yeah, I would love that. Yeah.
If you were from somewhere else other than US and you were listening right now, just say hello. You don't have to say anything else. Yeah.
No.your.writes.podcast@gmail.com.
We know you don't need the dots. We just like them.
You do need the dots, though.
We
to
just think
the
they're
email.
Neat.
They're neat.
You need at least one of the dots.
Just like we got words in between the ellipsis. It's really cool.
My Lord.
But, well, So, Colton, you did bring a song up, and I liked what you put in the email telling me what song it is. I'm so sorry.
Well, we have to thank our podfather slash Blamley member,
yes,
Leo Cardona, a.k.a. DJ Brute.
Baseblown CEO.
Because he sent a text to Rob and me, and that's I cannot see images in my phone, so I mm-hmm. had to ask what it was, and I had to look later on. That Weezer has a new album coming out.
Joy.
The the patron saint, like it or not, the patron saint of this podcast. Like
that's kinda, right. Our Mendoza line.
It is. And they are the first band that we ever covered. They yep. are there's a lot about us and Weezer that are we're just kind of intertwined with each other in a way they have no idea of.
Yeah,
we do. Is that a hopefully back scratcher? They won't.
It is, dude. My back itches a little bit. I had to. Ooh, I'm glad you called.
I'm talking.
Yeah, I figured I could kind of get away with this, be a little clandestine. But Colton called me out. Yes,
that's nice. I like that you have it. I'm appreciate. It. You can scratch yourself.
Weird. I'm an itchy person. I shower. I promise. Back to it.
But yeah, Shine Again. Right, is the track. Mm-hmm. And I'm both annoyed at this song in that I think at different points I was like, man, I don't know what I expect when I listen to new Weezer because it's so much of a dead horse that at this point it's its own joke and then it doubles back on itself. The joke of, man, when is the next great Weezer album going to happen? And then like albums have occurred
yes,
that have been okay. You and I would say famously, but that's not true. But we tried to cover what had been released up until that point. Was the White Album or the Black Album the most recent?
The most recent that I liked is the White Album.
And I think that was maybe the most like potentially worth your time to listen yeah. to. But I agree. We tried to do an entire discography of Weezer, which was the last time we did that many records at once. And
oh god, yeah, what was that? 14 albums?
It's just not a lot to recommend past a certain point. Like my, I think
we both agreed that we checked out.
And it's difficult because it's the subject matter of the songs. I mean, like Rivers Cuomo is always talking about how he has like this like Excel sheet or whatever with like words that sound good in songs, and he uh-huh. has a pattern. It's embarrassing to a degree that I don't know. I find him embarrassing, and I don't know how else to put that. And yet, musically, maybe I don't know how you feel about this. My take was musically, this is even when I say it, I'm going to cringe. There's interesting things that remind me of Pinkerton in this, in like the kind of weird, like the chorus part of this song is like it's a peak followed by a very quick descent. Like it's kind of taking you up this chord progression, and then it's shut up again. Like you're waiting for the big burst of like that big Weezer sugary pop progression. It doesn't happen, and that feels very Weezer or Pinkerton. Like that's part of that record I like so much. Yeah. But it's there's nothing beneath that. The song lyrically, I think it's kind of dead.
I think I've listened to this song 3-4 times, mm-hmm. and like lyrically, I listened read along one time. I was like, that's not necessary. Because when it first starts off, I actually think it's kind of cool. I like that, like, just, like, clangy, like, chug chord, you know, with the kind of, with the lead guitar kind of coming in right after it. And then when they all come together, I think it's sounding fine. And I had this weird, like, Fear Inoculum moment to where when you go, like, what's the difference between Fear Inoculum and Lateralis? I'm like, to a layman, like, to a casual Weezer listener, I can see them listening to this song going like, what's the difference between this and Pinkerton? It's like, there's a world of difference, but we also obsessed over it a little bit more. But when it comes out of this part and it hits the, this is where like, I just go like, oh crap, we're in for it. It's when it hits the, and I will tell you once again. And I think that lead riff should have been higher. But that was such a lazy drop in.
Yeah.
Where it had like potential to where I'm like, I really dig like the energy of this. And then it just hits that really boring chord progression and they keep that lead guitar part down. And then it does. I just don't like the to know fancy, where it's just like kind of writing that like major chord that's not really in the scale. It's just kind of shifting it to a major. I don't like that moment. But I do like that guitar walk down, that little lead walk down.
See, little flourishes like that made me, they're honestly, all it is just, it's like them playing Pink Triangle in a, you know, an encore this point. They don't mean anything, but they're little, oh yeah. I remember when they used to do that stuff.
And right here is where I feel like the song is like a jigsaw puzzle put together improperly. You know, because it's like, I feel right there. It's like, go back to that verse thing again and then kind of like build up again and maybe not do the same boring part that you do. But instead they hit that shine again. And even that part, I'm like, there's promise here, but you hit the shine again a little too early.
I appreciate the comment you made about Tool, because that was my comment to you.
Yes.
Which was listening to Fear Inoculum and going, I hear all the things that make Tool Tool in this song. And you very valiantly telling me, no, that's not happening.
Very aggressively.
And I think that's been like a whole, like hundreds of thousands of people having that conversation with Weezer. Like, why is Green Album not Blue Album? Mm-hmm. And honestly, I think to me, it reminds me of our discussion of Manchester Orchestra, where when I heard the album Cope, I said, it's an album that to me is so bad, it makes me question what was good about the albums I liked to begin with. Like the ones,
interesting.
Like, That Mean Everything to Nothing, and like those where it actually made me go back to those and be like, this is the trick. I know that in our Weezer discussion, I do remember enough that Blue Album was your favorite and Pinkerton was mine,
which could have been interchangeable. I think I was reactionary,
and I think it was like a 1A 1B or whatever, but it's weird to have this conversation with you now. I think in my head, I imagine us doing some kind of Weezer retrospective, but I also at the same time don't think I want to.
No. It's enough. It's enough. For anybody who's new to the podcast, you can listen to that one. That's all we're giving you.
The way I see it, though, is like I hear like just not like paint by number stuff. I hear some things that sound interesting because they're good at, you know, the base level of what they do. But he has lost any semblance of things to actually write a song about to me. Like there's nothing he writes about that is worth writing about. I listened to this with Casey at the breakfast table when it came out, and she was so annoyed. And my wife is someone who doesn't have like the bearings of like, she doesn't know about the Blue Album or Pinkerton. Like she doesn't know anything about this, but she doesn't know who they are. And she's just sitting there. And as she's hearing him sing about like the dog walk and the dishes, she just looks at, she goes, the ketchup, the fork, and the knife.
Very accurate, Casey.
He's like, I could do that too. I could just sing about random things. And honestly, it's so lyrically dead. Like his songwriting is so, I think that's the difference. I think musically they have lost like the kind of special density that those first two records had. And like, they've been cool since then. Madroit was, Maldroit was it? Yeah, I remember liking that because that was just them wanting to be 80s metalheads. And I'm like, that's great. That's so cool. But overall, I would say it's not that they're so noticeably different. It's the opposite. They're so the same. I mean, even when they try to do things that feel different, like The Greatest Man Who Ever Lived, right? Those songs that are meant to be like verging on like experimental. It seems so desperate to me. I don't know how to say it. I don't think they should be a band anymore.
I think it's fine they're a band, but the story arc is turning into like they're just doing math equations now, to where it's like this plus this equals song, to where like before there was the X factor of like meaning it and trying to find it, where now it just feels like they kind of like, okay, let's go back to being old Weezer. Okay, this is what we do in old Weezer, as opposed to there being kind of this magical moment of discovery within their writing, where I don't think they do that anymore.
I think that's kind of famously a reaction that Rivers Cuomo had after Pinkerton, right? Was how like personal and bare that album was, and creepy and weird. And yet that's also a good record. And him consciously wanting to change directions after that, which not for nothing. Hey, like I was actually, I don't know why randomly I found a Perfect Situation. And I think that was the track you and I both even in that discussion, we're like, oh yeah, that's like a, there are bright moments, right? There are songs where I'm like, that's cool. And I think it is, it's weird that he's capable of these like moments of like the little shines of that, right? And I know that's what keeps people going, because those first two records are really, really good.
Yes.
But it's also like, man, no one's going to take those first two records away from me.
No.
They're really not. Like no. When he sings like, what is it? Like, can't you see she belongs with me? And I really don't appreciate your excess, whatever. And then,
yeah.
But then it's, though I can't satisfy all the needs she has. And so she starts to wonder, can you blame her? Like, I was listening to that going, man, that's beautiful. That's like a really great line. And it's this melancholic moment that is touched with, like, it's a great melody. It fits really nicely with everything. And I just don't know. I have not heard him do anything like that in a long time.
It's true. It's true. But I mean, I did like the bridge in this song. I thought that when the musical little interlude before the last Shine Again, I thought the musicality there was pretty cool. I thought that was a cool little dropout. But again, that's the music. All right, and then it comes back to a kind of lackluster vocal part.
You put it nicely too. It feels like a jigsaw puzzle of the song. Like, there's no real resolution to the chorus, and there's no... It feels very like, yeah, like a fragmented, like, drop. Like, we're missing something.
Yeah, I wish I could have been there to produce it, which is so arrogant. But, like, it does feel like there's a good song in here that just doesn't get accomplished because it is, like, somebody had to go, like, no, I think that part's fine. Which we both know from song, that's the worst thing to say.
I think what we have needed from people that recorded us is someone to go, that wasn't good, do it again. Because we do that to ourselves, but we also are committed to this like punk ethos of, it was raw, it felt okay, it's gonna, and to me also in my head going, I don't think it's ever gonna get any better than that. And not like in a, like when
we
I
don't
do it,
have more time.
The time, yeah, because it's almost always on a time budget, but then it was also a version of, man, I don't have another gear. That was what you heard.
I get what you mean. Yes. It would be much better now. So on a scale from 0 to 100, what would you give this song?
Are we rating new music songs? 10.
We don't see, now this was interesting. I was trying to think of like...
I don't have a rating.
I was trying to think of what my rating system really is. Tor, I'm like, all right, a zero to 10, what would that be? And I realized what it would be. It would be a song by a band, by a local band that I don't like. And then like 10 to 20 would be like Friday or Soldier Boy.
Interesting. So there's like there's an intent behind things, like a, like an artistic intent. Is that what it is? And when there's like a.
Yeah. Like to where like a 20 to 30 would be a bad song by a local artist I do like.
I feel honored. I think what made Weezer the perfect 5 out of 10 band for our old format was really the inexplicable chasm between old and new. And like, it's always like a sense of averages. Like, we've covered bands before in the old format where I'm like, man, if we were doing these two albums and not these five, they would be 10 out of 10. And that's kind of the, like, I've also reckoned with, was there ever in the full discography format we did a 10 out of 10 band? And beautifully, no, I don't think so. Like, and I think that's kind of, and like, I was the most resistant when we were first talking about this podcast of doing any kind of a scoring thing.
Yeah.
And I still, like, I know I don't think either of us take it hyper seriously.
No.
But it's been nice to force me into kind of trying to sum up the overall feeling of something. And it's a good reminder too. It's like, it's everybody, it's like a baseball season. You win some and you lose some. Sometimes you lose two.
So we're halfway through the season because we're on episode 80. So, 162. That'll be when we get ready for the playoffs of Know Your Rights.
Oh Lord. We're at round one, I think. So are we taking a break so that I can just relax during this break and not do anything else.
Yeah, you know what? Everybody enjoy like hearing about Bassbone. And up next, we got "Any Man of Mine" by Shania Twain.
If you told me right now that we were doing a full discography, I'd go, sure, that's right.
Why, let's go.
I'm just going to very casually turn to my computer now. Please, everybody, relax to these commercials. And I'm going to be right back with you, fully prepared.
For that don't impress me much.
If you're looking for fun events, awesome music, and enjoyable podcasts, then look no further. The Bassbone Entertainment family has you covered. With so many talented people in our community, it was only right that we not only bring you events, but all sorts of awesome entertainment. Follow Bassbone on social media or join our Discord community to stay updated and engaged in everything. That is at Bassblown on social media and discord.gg/bassblown for our Discord. Bassbone Entertainment, bringing you more than just bass in your face.
Welcome to the Siren Songbook, a podcast where we discuss female artists, their music, their history, and the impact they've made on the music industry. Join us each month as we pick a new inspirational artist and celebrate exactly what it is that makes them so magical.
You can listen to new episodes of the Siren Songbook on Spotify every last Wednesday of the month. The Siren Songbook, a Bassbone Entertainment podcast.
Welcome back, everybody.
Welcome back. NPR Colton, NPR Rob here.
This is our week of giving.
And, that's right.
And today we are discussing,
yes,
That Don't Impress Me Much, from the 1997 mega hit record.
Yes.
Come On Over.
Yeah, because this is what, the sixth single from the album? I think it's sixth.
It is. It might have been. God, looking at the track listing, it was wild. And this is written, all those songs were written by Shania Twain along with her then husband, mm-hmm, Robert John Mutt Lang.
Yes.
One of those guys where you just don't know. Like, I never knew who John Mutt Lang was. And I went back through all of his credits. Did you see some of the songs that he had written for?
No, lay it on me.
One of those careers that is both impressive and yet from a distance, you're like, wow, he is insane in a way that I don't understand. He wrote a lot for one of my favorites, Bryan Adams.
Okay.
He, I believe, produced at least Everything I Do It For You. But he wrote a ton with Bryan Adams. So Far, So Good, I Will Always Return. Like a lot of stuff from the Spirit soundtrack. He co-wrote Don't Let Me Be the Last to Know. Britney Spears.
Way to go.
He wrote some Backstreet Boys tracks, none that we would remember. Like he, Michael Bolton, Def Leppard, Billy Ray Cyrus, but another one where I'd never heard before. Like it is impressive and yet also not impressive at the same time. It
sounds like the dream, man. Like, cause he just gets to kind of live in like anonymity and still have the money from like successful songs.
I think dream, and yet I also think now hearing two of the songs I know that he has written, one of which was assigned, one of which I guess I just did for fun. I sense an aura of what his work is. And even with those Bryan Adams tracks, I'm not a fan. I don't think so. But the Shania Twain of it all is better. I also do think it's interesting that this is a small tidbit, Research Corner with Colton. I looked up that he ends up cheating on Shania Twain with her best friend and pursuing a relationship with that person. And then Shania Twain the next year ends up marrying the former husband of the best friend. So there you go. Colton's Research Corner. Just things I just find when I'm researching.
That sounds like a great reality TV show right there.
So I want to ask you in a more important sense, why this song?
Well, I don't know if you remember, but my song choice was coming when we were having a very difficult time trying to get through a damn episode. And I had remembered you saying, like, man, we've been being pretty eclectic. So I had a song in mind going into the day of us recording the D'Angelo episode. Everybody go back and listen. We have some difficulties, but we get through it, and I think it's a good episode. But I had a song in mind. It was like this classic 70s song that I'll probably bring back later. But I was like, no, we can't do that. We've already done this so much. And by chance, just because I was trying to cleanse my palate and just remind myself that I listen to other music, because I listened to so much D'Angelo because, you know, it was such a long time frame to record the episode that I was like, I got to listen to something different. So I just went on a 90s pop country kick. And I was just doing that casually just to for my own sanity. And all of a sudden I was like, oh, how about we do a 90s pop country song? And so I had three candidates that were really sticking out to me. And it was, of course, Shania Twain. And then I wanted to do the song If You See Her, or If You See Him, the one with Brooks and Dunn and Reba McEntire.
Oh, okay.
Because I really love that song, but neither one of the artists wrote the damn song. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of like, oh, let's just use these artists to convey the song. I'm like, that won't work. So, and then it was the, I can't remember the name of the artist, but the Dust on the Bottle song. There might be a little dust on the bottle.
Ooh, I don't know that one.
Things. So, see, and I was like, this is a little more obscure. Let's go a big name, Shania Twain. Let's roll with that. And I kind of was remembering, like, I came up with that right at our break. I'm like, okay, I'm settling on this because I snuck in little hints.
Mm.
So that was really just the mind setting. It was kind of just, let's do something different.
I like it a lot. I like the turn. And you and I have been very vocal about our upbringings, parallel upbringings in the kind of pop country. Like, honestly, it's like the 90s, right? Where this, like, I don't know enough about the history of how country's evolved, other than I know that there does seem to be a change that happens. I think Shania Twain is a big part of it.
Yeah.
Where what sets up the landscape now of this, like, very messy, like, country pop, like, soundscape, right? And you have, obviously, there's Taylor Swift, and there's nowadays there's so many different country singers, I just don't know who they are, and I just accept, I just swim in the world of my own ignorance. But in the 90s, it was, you already mentioned, Brooks and Dunn, Reba McEntire, Garth Brooks, of course, Randy Travis, Kenny Chesney.
See, I'd consider Chesney on the latter side of that.
He's getting to the 2000s, I think. But I mean, a lot of this was just with my dad. And the person I actually referenced her last episode with Glassjaw. We were talking about the denial. Pam Tillis.
Yeah.
Who is one of my favorites. She's great.
But I mean, I figured Shania Twain is kind of the crossover, was big on that crossover.
Oh, for sure. And I mean, it's like her, I think, and maybe the Dixie Chicks were the two I was thinking of that were, and I think just the Chicks now, but I,
yes,
I always get,
they dropped the Dixie.
They dropped the Dixie, but that, I don't think I was as big a Shania Twain person. And part of it might be when it came in the night, I was like way more susceptible to like what was on the radio with my dad when I was younger, but I do remember this album being huge, and it was, and it's funny that it just felt like it was, and then Shania Twain just kind of disappeared from my life, and I didn't realize it until she came back. And I was like, oh yeah, what happened? Shania Twain just vanished.
I'm on the same page to where I was never really a big Shania Twain fan. I liked the songs, sure, but this is her last top 10 single. So this is right before she kind of vanishes.
And see, there again, I just think, it's like certain stars. It's like with actors too, where you have this thought in your brain. It's like, oh, they're famous. Like, and when you're younger, when someone is famous, they're going to be famous forever. Where, like, it's such a weird phenomenon as you grow older. Of like, when I see like an actor now in like a really crappy TV movie, and I go, they can't be in this. They're huge, and I'm like, oh no, that's just not how like life works for most people. Like, there's a very small percentage of people that stay on top forever.
That's true. Yeah. I can't remember who I saw the other day who was in a commercial, and it was like an old comedic actor, but they were playing like a straight character in a commercial. And I was like, what happened? Like, I can't believe you're here now.
There's going to come a time now where, like, I'm trying to think of who feels the most likely to do this so I don't seem like an idiot. But like, I was going to be like, when Billie Eilish is like in a cruise performance act, maybe not Billie Eilish, I don't know. But like, there, it's this kind of, I think the Chapel Roan seems like a good candidate for this, like a kind of one hit wonder status where they're there. It's like when the Thong Song was out, everyone, what you don't understand if you're not old enough to get this, I was like, oh, Cisco's going to be in my life forever. Cisco is never going to leave. And I'm like, oh no, what happened to Cisco?
God, that song's so good. Thong Song is so good. That big dramatic moment at the end of the song where I'm like, look how passionate he is. Baby.
That song is so ridiculous. And like, it was like, again, I when people talk about the 80s and certain songs, they're like, you don't get it, man. Like, it was huge. Like, yeah. I do understand that, because I don't think any generation, we all have stuff we have to own up to, or like, for a period of time, Cisco was God on earth, and we celebrated that song collectively.
Dude, I thought Drew Hill was going to be enough. Nope, Cisco solo. Let's do it, buddy.
And then he did the follow-up, which was the Dragon song, because the whole album was the Dragon or something like that. Yeah. And it was him fighting. If no one has seen this, that video, a dragon shows up. It's a super terrible CGI dragon. It's beautiful. And he punches. He like boxes the dragon. And he has like, hey, dragon, messing up around here. And it's
the dragon wouldn't show him his thong. Cisco.
So this is all to say that I'm happy we're doing Shania Twain.
It's the quirkiness of it all that I was like, let's do it, man.
I'm kind of wanting you to take the lead, not because I'm not prepared, but more because I'm still trying to find my footing with this. Like, I think it is a couple things happening to me at once. Like, when we do songs that are more pop centered, like I always try to recalibrate the way that I think about songwriting based on what I think they're trying to do. And this is like back when pop music, and to me, maybe that's a good place to ask you if this is like, if we're coming at it from the same angle. The critique I've read from this song is that it's not country enough. And I think that's like a Shania Twain like mainstay, is how country she's supposed to be. Yeah. It's not a country song. It's like a pop, like down the middle 90s. And like, that's how I take it. And I don't care about that conversation that much. It's much like her Cowboy Carter conversation.
Yeah, I get you. I mean, I feel like it's plucking from three different trees. It's going from the country tree to the rock tree to the pop tree. And it took more apples from the pop tree.
That's a very beautiful way to put that.
Thanks, man.
Plucking apples from trees. I like
that. I came prepared.
Mine is that she drove her car straight into the pop tree. All the apples fell down on top of the car. And the rock tree and the country tree were off to the side going, thank God we didn't get hit by that car. That would have been terrible. One of our apples would have gotten.
Well, I don't know, man. Like, when this song kicks off, first of all, that little like, that is a cool little like effect. And when I first was hearing, like, coming into it this time, I was like, what's he doing? What's the effect?
Is it
like
a slide?
It might be a slide, but it's really just a A sharp to a G sharp and just kind of sliding between those.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's probably just like drenched in reverb. I'm sure that they did some studio tricks to it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and then we just get the ow, bad. Like that O to start it. I'm going like, all right, I'm not going to like, it's where you have to like suspend your critique of lyrics immediately.
Well, so two things. One thing I'm trying to make a more careful note of, I've been re-listening to past episodes and I really do over-abuse. I know it's a point of like comic effect at this point, but I want to say one thing. No, yeah. I will say exactly 25 things this episode.
Nice.
Thing one, cowbell.
Cowbell.
No or yes.
Of course.
Don't you dare quote that dumb SNL
I'm not.
Skit.
It's okay. So, first of all, it's not. Well, it's dumb, but that's what makes it great.
Okay, it's kinda, not. Okay. Kinda, moratorium.
Kind of like a lot of pop country. So we're already bleeding this together. First, Shania Twain, outside of like some of her country ballads, it's mostly going to be a little bit of playfulness to her. That's kind of her niche when it comes to like her pop, more poppy songs.
Yeah.
And honestly, right away after the cowbell. So for you, is it no cowbell?
I was just more in like the cowbell is the only instrument I can think of that is literally just an ironic instrument. Like, and so when you use it, it is always meant to me as a form of irony where it's not, to me, it is a terrible sound and yet it's not the point. The point is that you used it and someone could know that you used it. It's similar to a triangle to me in which I don't know why it exists. I'm sure it played a role for someone. I think Don't Fear the Reaper has poisoned a lot of people.
Quit trying to drag me back to SNL on this.
I'm just saying, but I'm on board.
They're in the cowbell, the triangle, the tambourine. They're kind of in like the accompaniment the accompaniment for percussion.
It is the click track of it. It's a click track. But I'm weirdly, after all this little, you know, waffling I'm doing to you right now, I'm pro. It's fine. I think you're right. There's something, I think this is Mutt. Can we just call him Mutt Lang? What's the shorthand? Mutt Lang. I know that he is the instrumental part of this songwriting duo. Mm-hmm. And she's just coming in with lyrics. I think that's how this song came together too. I know a lot more about how they wrote I Feel Like a Woman, but I'm not going to get into that.
Yes. Another time, Colton.
He does seem to excel at these riffs that are, like, I won't say iconic, but they are like simple, and yet they are kind of like the perfect things to just pepper through the song. Like these little, like nothing riffs that end up like getting a lot of mileage.
Well, and that's exactly it. Because when it hits that first part, that like that actually works so well with the chords for me, because the chord progression is A minor. Okay, everything is sharp. Add a sharp to this, but there's a capo on the first fret for me. So just add a sharp to whatever chord I say. But it's A minor, F, C, G, and then back to the A minor. And usually if you think the song starts on an A minor, that's going to be more of a sorrowful or a darker sound. But this doesn't have that characteristic. This performs more like it's played in C major. And that's because that first note of the riff is the low C, which isn't an A minor chord, but it plays the low C, so it kind of gives the personality of starting on a C. And I just think it adds such a cool quality for this to be so uplifting and start with the A minor. Immediately, I'm like, that's pretty rad.
But it is too, it feels like such a typical commercial move, like pop songwriting 101, to have the melody mime the vocal melody. And it does, right? And I think that's also like what you're saying is cool, that it is minor, right? And like how it sounds, and like the riff is actually kind of dark. It's not great. Like it's a riff. I know when a riff sounds like something I would come up with. I know it's not like rocket science. Like you're kind of following the neck down. Right for the do.
Yeah, it's kind of a root notey thing, like kind of the lower notes. This is all pretty much going to be on the E A D string.
Right,
it vibes really cool, and it has a cool timing to it, because it does that little like to where it's like it hits right before the drum comes in on the downbeat. That's a cool subtle rhythm, but that just adds a little bit more musicianship to it.
And it does when she comes in to sing. And it's funny because even like the little ow, like the little twainisms.
Yeah.
She's bringing more like. What makes this song feel so much lighter is it's all Shania. And it's like, it's nothing. This is like pure pop performance where it's not the lyrics to me. It's not anything except it's just her. Like, and like the little, like, I know we'll get into it, but like, even like the little like vocal asides that she does, like spoken word things, which I'm interested in your take on these, given
they're playful.
Rob's past history on spoken word. But it's like when you see an actor, like a movie star in like a bad movie, I'm not saying this is a bad song, but like in a movie, maybe a Brad Pitt, yeah. Right? Where there's nothing about this movie to recommend except they're just being a movie star. And you're like, oh yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Like that's part of like, at least in the verses of this song, like I don't find the verses as interesting, and yet they are compelling because Shania Twain is just a compelling vocalist. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that you have to kind of suspend it, like I was saying before, where it's like it's a grain of salt, because if she got too poetic with it, I'd be very annoyed. This song is shooting for straight down the middle. This isn't supposed to be that big a challenge to the listener.
And this is, we've had a discussion of like pop songwriting in the past. In fact, I think like Max was on one of those where we were talking about I think Apatapata got brought up at least once.
That was with Alex
Yeah. And then we brought it back up again, I think, because we were still arguing about it when Max came on.
I have been very tempted to choose APT as one of our song spotlights, but
I am so ready to do that. I wouldn't even be upset.
I still like it.
This is where, again, I say I have to kind of recalibrate the way that I think about songwriting when these kinds of songs happen. I think what you've been pointing out so far that Mutt is doing with the music, where it's just very capable. It's just, I'm going to use a lot of movie references today. And I think the reason being is I don't know how else to talk about pop songwriting other than the language of like summer blockbusters. Cause to me, they're kind of hand in hand. Like they're the two like really commercially successful, publicly accepted forms of art that people seem willing to suspend typical ways of thinking about like artistic renderings in that. Like they're more willing to just say, I guess food is there too, right? Where if you go to McDonald's, like you're not going to approach it with the same level of expectation as you would if you went to, you know, Michelin star restaurant blank. Whatever.
Yeah, I've never gone to McDonald's with a friend and they're just like, oh my God, dude, this burger.
Right. The language then to me feels really similar in like how I think about it. Like there's little things you can do. Like I can see a movie that I think is, there's just nothing artistic there to recommend, but it also feels very capably made in a way that I'm like, it's reassuring, right? There's something about a pop song too, where like when I think of a lot of 2000s pop that I'm like way more invested in, and like I can see some of those pop songs and just be like, yeah, like that's amazing. The little flourishes that Mutt is doing, you're talking about the progression along with the rhythm or the lead moving into the vocals, it's doing enough. And yet I'm always, this is where I think my space is in the rest of this episode, I'm always going to take one step back to not give them too much credit, because I think you and I both know what's happening here isn't hard, right? It's not hard.
It's not hard.
I think what she is doing is the thing neither of us can do. What he is doing is not hard.
Okay. It's not hard, but there is a cleverness to the writing on this.
It's
Cause,
clever.
Because when we're going through the, you know, the first like, I met a few guys who thought they're pretty smart. Like, obviously, those are kind of just cliche little rhyme schemes throughout it. But when it hits that, you think you're special? Like, that's a great chord change. Because the whole time we're playing in, I'll call it C major. But it goes, and again, everybody keep in mind, the sharp, add a sharp to it.
Yeah.
But when it, from that part, it does a complete scale shift up one. And usually you have to do kind of like a fancy footing to go into it. But it just uses the circle of fists and goes into the D major, A major, G. That's a great chord progression that, to be fair, you and I don't really utilize stuff like that. The scale change quite as much. And a lot of people don't. And it's hard to execute just right. But I think that that moment is so flawlessly transitioned into the D.
I maybe want to not even amend, but just clarify what I'm saying. Like, I have no real critiques of the way that he is musically putting this together. And I'm with you where when you hear a song like this, it's like one sleek piece of modern furniture to me. Like it's one piece. It feels sleek. And it's funny. We were just talking about Weezer, where that song feels, those two next to each other are really interesting, because what used to make Weezer great was exactly what makes this song good. Yeah. Right. Is like the songs feel all of a piece. Like when I listen to My Name is Jonas, that song is like carved from rock.
Yeah.
Like, and I think great that's the missing element. They don't have, it feels like they're trying so much harder now when they never used to sound like they had to try. And this is a song that feels very similar to me. Like I don't see any duct tape between sections. And like, even the chorus change feels kind of abrupt, right? Like you're talking about that, that chord shift that happens. And it's kind of, it also, I am always going to temper everything I say about this song with what I'm also reminding myself, which is, this is the illusion of pop music that I'm always a little annoyed by for the most part. Like, and it's more, I think, reactionary to what's happened after the song got released, like the kind of poptimism like of the 2000s and on, which is because pop music is so popular and so commercially successful more than any other form of music, it must be superior in how it's written. And like, there's something artistically superior in it that we have to accept.
Okay. Well, and I hope that I didn't.
I don't think you were.
I'm like, I'm not trying to cross that line.
But the thing is, you and I were growing up at a time where these kinds of songs weren't cool to like in like a, and yet they, you know, it's weird. It's like when we were younger, they were, but when we were writing songs in the 2000s, it wasn't, like getting influences from songs like this, you don't have any credibility for that. Whereas today, I feel like it is more accepted to strive for this kind of success. And yeah. I think we were poisoned
or
by like least, 90s ethos to never sell out.
Yeah. Or at least strive for like, hey, what are these chords doing to kind of understand it? Because you can learn from that transition right there. And even how it comes out of it to where we hit the talking part, we can get this out of the way. But it's like, okay, so you're a rocket scientist. Plat that don't impress. But they do. It's a cool chord thing that happens there to where instead of doing the A minor F C G, it goes F C G A minor to where it kind of, it's still continuing this like rotation of the chords.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like stuff like that, and it's a simple trick, but you can apply it to anything. I mean, A minor F C G, that's also Passenger by Iggy Pop. Think of how different these two songs are. You know, It's like you can apply a lot of cool aspects of it. So I think that's where we kind of missed out on. It's like, well, I don't want to learn how to play this because I'm not trying to play that genre. But it's like you can apply the musicianship to other genres.
Yeah. And I mean, this is where I remember starting to write more of my own stuff.
Mm-hmm.
It was kind of, I mean, I always talked about like Tom Petty, but it was also kind of all this music that like, and like when I listen back to like some like early songs I wrote, like, I think I'm thinking of a song we used to play live a lot. It was Someone to Love. The like, found me a lover, she's a needle in the hay.
Yeah.
When I listen back to that song now, I'm like, that's, I mean, not like a great song, but it is this, like, coded mm-hmm. into this era, right?
Yeah,
and what
yeah.
this song is doing. So I don't know why I feel like I need to hit the pause button on this. It's just, it's a hard song to talk about for that.
Yeah, well, and you were the first out of the two of us to actually go like, well, I am going to pluck from this. I was so dead set in my ways of like Radiohead and, you know, Tool, where I'm like, I want darker, way trippier sounds.
Honestly, and now I'm where you are again. Like,
we've switched.
We can never be on the same page again.
We'll never be on the same page.
I do think you touched on something else. I think this song does that's really smart. I do think it's a really smart song, which is... Mm-hmm. She is singing these lyrics with the like she's a star right at the time and like she and like that's also what I was trying to say is like the music part of this, the construction part of it is like admirable, right, and clever, but this song is nothing unless it's Shania Twain doing what she does, because like it's the little stuff, right, the lyrics, as cringy as they could be, knowing to say some of them rather than sing them is really smart. And like, I know it's also part of what gives it the humor, but it's also there's a way to try to sing into the chorus rather than these little asides. Okay. Like, okay, so you're a rocket scientist. Like,
it's almost, there's voice acting there. I mean, how many times have you heard an athlete do a commercial? It's awful. Like they can't deliver their lines. And it's just like, she has that way towards like, she still can sing. She has a delivery to it that it's like, hey man, you're selling the song. You're doing it just right.
And it's the, even like the little like flourishes at the end of these verses too, where she's like partially singing and not like it's, and almost like kind of laughing through the line. Like, and it's meant to be laughing at the guy. Right. And like the subject matter in that, again, it's like, it's the fact that each verse is directed at another kind of guy. Like that's also, I think a version of like that 90s pop songwriting we both love. Like I think of like some of the 90s country songs that are stuck in my brain are ones with this same kind of progression where every verse is addressing like a different stage of life, or like, I always think like, Don't Take the Girl.
That's like exactly what I was thinking of.
Yeah.
Exactly. What
little
I was
Johnny
thinking.
Is taking
little
a
Johnny. Yeah. Getting married. Freaking. Yeah.
Oh no. The second one's getting mugged in an alleyway.
Yeah. Getting mugged in an alleyway.
But I mean, Kenny Chesney, who is that?
No, that's isn't that Tim McGraw?
Oh my God. You're right. It's Tim McGraw.
Yeah. But yeah, I love that song. And it is like, I think if you and I wrote a song like that, all of our friends, all of our contemporary musicians would be like, that's really fucking corny. But for this genre, for what pop country was, it's just like, no, that's actually good. Because there's like this inherent silliness to it. And while that song is very serious, there's just kind of like, there's a looseness to the artistic, there's kind of an everyman aspect to it, I think is a good way to put it.
And it's also weirdly traditional. Like I think both these like I'm already going to amend. I'm going to do a whoopsie on something I said previous, which is I don't think the song is country at all. Obviously, the guitar, like there's little guitar parts, even in like the chorus and that. I love the lead guitar during the chorus. Like
it's great.
Just the little, like, and that's where I'm like, okay, this song is very capably made. Yeah. And so I know there's a lot of those like structures that are dipping from the country well, but I think the way the verses progress, that's country. That's like the like kind of storytelling thing that pop doesn't have. Like when I just for fun listened to Man, I Feel Like a Woman, I was like, man, this song is so dead. It's dead from the inside. It's like atrocious. And so much of it.
Going out tonight.
And that's the thing. Like every verse was just literally saying the same thing.
Yeah.
And I was ready. Man, I was so ready to tell you that the Wikipedia page for Man, I Feel Like a Woman is so unhinged. Because you know how they do like the composition sections?
Yeah.
Like the composition section of that. I go read it later. Someone, whoever spent time to talk about that song, I just need them to do something else. This listening to this song though, it's funny. I was so annoyed by that song, and we listen to this one. It's like a breath of fresh air. I'm like, oh yeah, this is what makes Shania Twain so good. Like I know it feels like we're in the chorus, but the best part of Man, I Feel Like a Woman is also what makes this song great. The and in this one, it's the little like uh-ohs. Right? Mm-hmm. Like the little vocal flourishes that aren't the lyrics.
Yeah.
And the, what is it? The don't get me wrong, that little falsetto she does.
Don't get me wrong.
Oh my God. Like that's the stuff.
Yeah. Those lyrics are, you can't get away with lyrics. Like, all right, I'm going to get there because we're starting the second verse, right? Mm-hmm. This is actually where I love the little like vocal melody she has. And it's like, and all that extra whole gel in your hair out of Locket. I think that's great. I love the cadence of it all. I love the Locket with Pocket, you know. And this is where, like, I picture, like, if Conor Oberst wrote this song. Like, the next part would be like the, oh, you think you're Mona Lisa. Oh, you know, like something like that to where I'm like, I'm glad that she, like, this song doesn't take itself too serious, where it's like, no, something special, you think you're something else. Like, it's that down home country, like, vibe to it, where it's like, I'm so glad that we didn't throw in, you think you're Mona Lisa, or in the first verse, oh, well, you think you're Oppenheimer, you know, like something like that to where it's like, you could take these horrible, horrible choices.
Can I say something? Dude. Yeah. You made the song better. I think it's better.
I think it's better. I don't think it's
better. Why not, though?
Because I think it's just...
I mean, I don't know about the Oppenheimer one. The Mona Lisa one I like.
Yeah, but... It takes away from kind of the... You've brought it up before in previous songs where it's like it takes away from the conversationality of like the... I'm not phrasing it the same way you've described it as, but it's like it's talking to you.
Oh, no, for sure. Like, I think that's what the verses do so successfully, right? And the choruses are different, and that's usually what happens here, right? Is... Mm-hmm. Mostly, and it's funny, Conor Oberst also does this, where the verses are the conversation and the chorus is the exclamation mark, right? Or whatever accent, like emphasis we need. And well, it's the same there. Like, she doesn't really sing until the chorus. I mean, she's singing in the verses, but it's also dipping into that. Like, I think because heaven forbid it should fall out of place, right? That's again, where she kind of slips into like the... and so it is conversation, and like I would say literally in that case conversational. The rhymes are fine. My pushback would be I don't ever think, and I know there is always a difficulty, right, in how we quote unquote spruce up or punch up a lyric sheet, whatever, to a song like this. There is a, I'm going to use a word right now that it feels weirdly like, I know, not weirdly, it feels like an insult. This is dumbed down material and we don't need to undumb it.
Absolutely.
Is that kind of what you're saying?
That's pretty much what I'm getting at.
But I also, I don't know. Like, I don't, I'm not like fighting for, let's all start saying you think you're Mona Lisa. But I also think, I think there are people like pop songwriters who have done versions of that. And I'm like, yeah, that's good.
Like, yeah. I think overall, I just like, this is a song to where I feel like, give me the hard rhyme. I don't want the soft rhyme in a song like this. Just
oh, I agree with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm coming at it kind of a funny place to this, because having just listened over and over again to a bad version of this same songwriting.
You haven't mentioned that.
I know, right? They're both hard rhymes, but mm-hmm. these hard rhymes work so much better. And I think it is in part because of the vocal performance. It's also the subject matter.
Yeah.
And I think the hard rhymes here are just better. Like the, mm-hmm. the just want to dance, don't want no romance. Like there's versions in that song uh-huh. that are trying to be fluid and string things together, like feel the attraction, right? Those little things too, mm-hmm. that this song isn't trying to do that as much. And it's letting the big moments hit harder. Like those end rhymes have more space for yeah. themselves.
Yeah. Like Lock It Pocket. And we'll actually get to one that I really like coming up, but I think we're hitting the guitar solo, which mm-hmm. I'll say is I like one, because right before the guitar, it does again that like, and then it starts the guitar solo on that same note, where I just thought that like that was like a nice touch to it. And then it's just a great like country rock guitar solo.
And it's weirdly, right, for a song that is so much about the broad strokes, mm-hmm. like it's kind of a diddly little solo. it's weirdly noodly, right?
Oh, yeah. This is something, I don't know if you're going to agree with me on this, but she has a couple of ones. She does a yeah on that. I get Petty vibes. I get like a Tom Petty vibe.
Okay. I had to listen to what you're saying. Like at first I thought you were being like, she doesn't want the guitar to take up too much space.
So oh yeah. No. I get like, there's so many moments in this song where I get like, where I'm like, oh, that gives me a little bit of a Tom Petty feel.
I mean the chord progression and the rhythm, this, like the strumming, yeah. that's Tom Petty. The I mean, what? I honestly think it is a Tom Petty song.
Yeah, and she has the. I have to say this. She's got kind of the Tom Petty cool to her voice. Not like they sound the same, but like the delivery is like coming from like kind of just like cool, relaxed singing the song.
I'm
alone on this, but that's just the vibe I get.
This seems, for the record, everyone, like I'm being like weirdly defensive about Tom Petty. No, how dare we invoke the Petty? It's not that. I'm like, I've had to explain this to a student before where they thought I was upset. And I was like, no, this is the face I make when I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Which also feels like I'm upset. And it's usually because I'm not happy to be thinking. Yeah. I mean, there is something about the delivery that is. The word I would use is effortless. And I do think that is something Petty does. I do think, though, she is, it's hard for me because she's just so much of a better like vocalist in the traditional sense of things. Where I think with Petty, the same version we're talking about is also the warbly thing that made his voice so distinctive. That is, it's kind of an apple orange situation for me. And yet, I do think you're right that over singing this song and doing again, it feels like an acting performance in like the highest tier. Like you have to have that level of just total derision for these men, right, that are like approaching.
Uh-huh.
And it's done in a way that is dismissive. Like it's a dismissively sung song. And I think that is, honestly, it's the secret sauce. Because it is, right? Mm-hmm. It's like the animating force. Even like the little yeahs where, I don't know if you thought the same as me, like when she does that first yeah during the solo, I thought the solo was done. And I was thinking, that's kind of not, like,
mm-hmm.
it's she's kind of in control of everything. And so when she's, like, even at the beginning too, like if this isn't a pop song, she's not doing those little things. And you and I were just having a discussion about another band where the vocalist coming in, I think it was First Aid Kit, actually, where they would do their little harmonies during solos and that. And at that point, I think I was on record as saying, I want them to ease back. And that was also because the tradition they were in was felt like it was trying to be more traditional and more quote unquote authentic in scare quotes. This is different. And I'm like, she's a pop star. She should be in every single inch of this song. Like,
And
don't give the instruments anything.
She didn't like take away from the guitar solo at all. I think it was just kind of like, yeah, that's That was a cool little, like, I don't know who did it. It could have been Mutt Lang. Thank you. Yeah, Mutt Lang. Like, it could have been his idea or her idea, but whoever's idea was, I was like, I think that's a cool little thing. It's, we talked about it before. It's those little one-time occurrences that turn into something that kind of makes the song. Where it's like, I like that when the solo kicks in. I sing along to it every time. Yeah.
I'm gonna give us a name for the man who does the guitar solo.
Mm-hmm.
Brent Mason. He has performed with artists such as, I mean, his artists he's performed
with. It's got to be a lot of those country artists.
I'm going to read just a couple of the lines. All right. George Strait, Alan Jackson, Shania Twain.
There we go.
David Gates, Brooks and Dunn, Zach Brown mm-hmm. Band, Blake Shelton. Randy Travis,
mm-hmm.
Tim McGraw. I mean, this guy's...
Honestly, if you wouldn't have read the list, I already kind of had the assumption that he was a gun for hire. You want the guitar solo done right? Pick up this guy.
Yeah, and like you said, it's actually where I think the song does break from what I would expect of like a pop. Like mm-hmm. it feels more willing to challenge the listener in what it's giving you, and yeah. it's also quick, which I appreciate too.
Yeah, but coming out of it. I love that vocal melody.
You're one of those guys who likes to shine his machine.
With the return of the cowbell.
With the return of the cowbell, but let's focus on that melody.
Okay.
And I like the rhyme scheme here, because I like the, like, likes to shine his machine. You make me take off my shoes before you let me get in. That has a little bit more of the soft rhyme to it, where, you know, it's like, it's not an obvious rhyme. It's not that, like, in.
But don't you? So I love like the kind of playing, like almost like CSI, right? But like songwriting. Mm-hmm. Like I love trying to unpack where I think the lines came from. That one, don't you think, like before you let me get in, that line was there? Like I feel like most couplets, there was one line that was there and then they had to find a way to get there, or it was the opposite. Like they loved the first line so much and they had to find a way to rhyme it the second time. I think it's good too, but it's funny to think the machine part, like shine is machine. Again, like, I like the shine and machine too, those next mm-hmm. to each other. So there's something there, but do you think that before he lets me get in, that came first?
I'll take it further back. I think that she probably was struggling, or they were struggling with, like, okay, we got brains, we got looks. What the hell do we close this out with? Because it's like, it can't be personality, because I think that's supposed to be a good thing.
That's like the point, right, of the song, yeah. Maybe.
Yeah.
It's maybe.
Like, or do you think you're a womanizer? Or it's like, well, I mean, if he needs to have the touch, there's probably a little bit of womanizing going on here.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So it's just like, what could, car? Like, what? I'll be honest. That's the biggest letdown for me is this section. Even though I think the lyrics function fine, the idea that it's like we close out with like he's into his car.
Do you think
they should go more superficial?
They should have switched the second and third verse, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. But I mean, we can get back into the forensics of it all. Yeah. Like, I think there was definitely the melody first. It's like, okay, we can't just go into, you know, the softer, like, I never met a guy. Like, it's like, you can't hit that at the end of the solo. So it's like, let's go higher. Mm-hmm. Like, you make me take up. So maybe it could have been something like that, where it's like, all right, well, now we got to apply something here. But it is interesting to try to see which rhyme came first.
And I do appreciate, like you said, it would be weird for the song to have so many of those kinds of rhymes. Like if it was nothing but those kinds of soft rhymes, it would feel, I mean, it's like a sugar-free cola. Like I don't mm-hmm. want it, but I also like the other version of that though, is when it's too much of those big heavy handed rhymes, like I just start to feel dirty listening to it. Like, and I can't like it is threading the needle. If you want the person to not hate themselves at the end of listening to the song, which I think a lot of pop music doesn't care about. Because they don't care about music.
It's interesting too, because now I'm thinking about the entire last verse, to where it's all like soft rhymes, and it's like, I can't believe you kiss your car at night, and then she does a little bit of the talky laughing, it's like, come on, man, you must be joking, right? Oh wait, no, that is a, all right, sorry, that is a hard rhyme.
But it's it's the way that she delivers it that doesn't make mm-hmm. it feel that way.
Yeah,
right? And I think because the words, like the performance feels so ironic, like so like sarcastic, It's the most like contemporary comparison point I can make is like Sabrina Carpenter, who's terrible. But I think what she does too with a lot of her lyrics is like in her delivery, she seems so sarcastically detached from her lyrics, which people have said are clever, and or they've used the word witty, much like I've heard in other bands. I'm like, come on, what are we doing? But I mean, Shania Twain is obviously better, but it's similar, right? Where like if you approach that kind of song writing and delivery in a way that kind of feels like, hey, I get it. I mean, it's like how a lot of action movies are like comic book movies down now. When they discover that like sort of sarcastic, humorous voice, where they're like, hey, this is all garbage, right? But it's fun and you're going to have a fun time like when you're watching it. Like well before we got sick of that mode of things, it was really smart and clever to do.
I can agree with that. And also, I do like the song Please, Please, Please by Sabrina Carpenter.
Oh, man, that song bugs me.
I like it, but I understand why it would bug you.
It's
no APT.
I do like when she comes back with, okay, so what do you think? You're Elvis or something?
Ah, talk about ruined. Like the
where
last...
does that come from, though? Yeah.
Apparently she likes Elvis, and I'm not a huge Elvis fan. I like songs by him.
It feels like that's like in media res, like something came before that was cut out. Like I think maybe that was like another verse that she cut.
Yeah, it could have been like instead of like maybe she was torn on like Brad Pitt, Elvis.
Well, and like the whole idea with Brad Pitt, right, is that there was a whole thing going on with him and Gwyneth Paltrow at the time, and then he supposedly did a shoot for Playgirl.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, that doesn't impress me. Yes.
Honestly, when I read that, I was like, there's a photo of Brad Pitt naked out there?
I had the same thought.
Google.
Okay, I didn't have the exact same thought that you did, but I remember going, oh, I feel like that would have been more of a thing.
Yeah.
I don't know. You take the good with the bad. Like you live by the sword, die by the sword.
It's one of those things. That's my least favorite lyric, but that's just because I'm like, Elvis is overrated in my book.
Well, also it just feels so like, she's like, what, you think you're like Ricky Nelson or something? Like even in the 90s, that wasn't like a good comparison.
I think there was like this big like Elvis revamping that was going on at that time where they were like selling like huge box sets, and like there was kind of this big, like, we got to keep him big. Like, they do it with the Beatles all the time. You know, they would do it with these artists where it's like, we got to keep their legacy alive. To where I think that might have coincided with a summer or a time frame right there to where it's like, we're going to really push Elvis for this little time frame. And she might have.
She's a part of the Elvis conspiracy.
It could be. And you know what? I don't think that this song isn't trying to make money. I'll put that out there for sure.
Oh, yeah, I agree with that. I do want to bring up, because I promise you I'm not trying to be facetious.
I think this is point number 18.
I know, I should have been right around there. Track. Yeah. This is my 18th point that I want to say. I do like that they came back to the cowbell, because I think it's an annoying instrument. I think when people use it, even in the 90s, I'm annoyed that they use it. Like I think it's dumb. And I can't wait
for you to ask me to feature on one of your songs again. I'll be like, well, I got an idea. I got an idea, buddy.
That would mean that you'd feature on the song.
Yeah. You have all the say-so whether it goes in. Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm saying I don't know if you would. But yeah,
that's true.
I think it's when they go back to it, when everything drops out, and it's just the vocals and the bridge. I'm like, you know what? That does show commitment. Like if it was just for the opening, just like the click track with the... and not just with the kick, because it's the kick too, and I get that it adds like some high end to it. I do appreciate they come back to it, because it does give that continuity, because it makes me more susceptible, like, oh, okay, I get it.
Yeah. And I gotta give a lot of credit to the bass player throughout this song. That could be a very boring bass line. He does add like little flourishes to make it at least exciting for himself, because it is really, really just like boom, bomb, 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 ba-dum, bomb, bomb. Like, hey, you're staying in that pocket, though. You're right with that kick. But
I think the rhythm section in general were, you know, they got their check, man.
And they got the pocket. They hit that pocket. They stayed in the pocket for their pocket.
I mean, I don't know if it's like a four. I think it's a pocket. Yeah, it's a pocket. They're in it.
But my last thing for the song is I really like that at the end it comes in with that like at the same time with the bow down down bow. To where I like those little moments where those parts were separated throughout the song, and then to close it out they're playing at the same time to kind of give a grander finality to the tune. I think those are cool songwriting or music writing decisions.
I was looking at the personnel and.
It's a lot.
It's funny because the different like guitar, there's so much guitar work happening here where there's like Biff Watson guitars. And then I love that there's Dan Huff guitar textures. Mm-hmm. Also six string bass and talk box, which did you hear talk box on this song?
No, but I wonder if that's like they recorded it and they kind of put it lower in the mix to add that like kind of distant effect to kind of.
Do you think on like the lead line?
Yeah, I could picture like it could be like Dorian's just like, wow, wow, wow. That's how those sound, everybody.
That was very good.
Thanks, man.
That was very good. No, but I was thinking too, I know this is going backwards, but at the beginning of the second verse, like the little like. It's almost like he's riding the volume knob on the guitar. I think it's pedal too, and pedal steel. But
yeah, because there's pedal steel on this. So yeah,
it's like little flourishes like that too, where it's not the notes, but it's like these kind of like gentle flourishes in and out, like the pedal coming in. Like guitar wise, it's a very cool song. I don't like rhythm wise. It's just nothing. Like, but it's not supposed to be anything. But then it's like I said before, it's technical. Like competency at a level that's just really nice to see. And then the last time I'm going to bring this up, point 20 is comparing it with Man, I Feel Like a Woman for fun. Like that song was so overproduced. It's weird to me they're on the same album. They don't feel like they're in the same session. Cause like that, like when I heard that one, what I wanted to talk to you about was like weird. Like instrument things going in and out in a way that made no sense to me, and like the synth being this really out of place instrument I didn't like.
This I'm gonna song have to listen to this song. I haven't listened to that song in so long. To
it audibly, it was like aggressive. Like the keys that happened. The reason I was trying to ask you about it was like the keys that are happening during the chorus. It feels like a strobe light for my ears, and it's not nice to listen to. Like your version of the like when they were plucking that like harpsichord thing. And it was like First Aid Kit. It was that, and I was like, I don't like this at all.
I don't like strobe lights. Period. So you describing it for ears, I'm like, yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah, there's just no discipline in that song. It's like way overproduced. This song on the opposite end is really smartly put together.
Yeah, I really don't hear anything in this song that I would remove. Elvis. It's the only thing I would remove.
Yeah, like in 1990, I guess what they're describing is someone who, I know they're three different men, right? But I'm like, none of those three really, maybe the hair thing.
Yeah.
But she already talked about Brad Pitt, which feels like a way more typical, like, it's not even like the Elvis thing dates it. And like, weirdly enough, the Brad Pitt thing doesn't date it either yet.
Yeah. But,
I don't know. It is a weird thing at the end to just mention.
And also, before we go to our break, you remember the music video for this?
I know it was shot in
the Mojave Desert. Yeah. Barstow. Yeah. And it's her in like the leopard print or whatever. And she's like hitchhiking and she keeps turning everybody down.
Yeah.
It reminds me so much for some reason of the survival commercials. Remember to where it's like, are you insured? Yeah. By survival? No, I can't take that risk.
Dude, I had to think for a second. Was that like a local commercial or was that national? That felt like one of those.
Maybe it was just local, but I just remember that commercial. Email us at no.your.writs.podcast@gmail.com.
Yeah, our listeners from Lebanon, did you also get the survival insurance commercials from? Do you know what's funny is I like randomly was thinking of like growing up in Lancaster, like when we were kids, like they used to have on the local, like on Channel 3. The Cowboy Phil, or what was it? Wild Phil. The Wild Phil commercials. Like, and I can't remember what company it was for, but he was like a cowboy action star. They used to shoot these like Wild Phil commercials. And I think it was like, it might've been insurance or something weird like that. Probably. And I remember thinking, oh, everybody knows Wild Phil. Like he's like a national, like I couldn't wrap my brain around the idea that it was for a local access channel. Mm-hmm. No one else knew who he was. And when I saw him in a dinner, like for a banquet or something, and he was this drunk, like crazy guy, I was like, it's Wild Phil.
Probably sitting there with RX Paris,
I played baseball with RX Paris's kid.
Oh, nice. I guess. I don't want to get too political here, but not necessarily a big
you
fan.
Take a stance against
of. I'm sure the kid was fine.
I don't remember.
Actually, I'm sure the kid probably didn't end off fine. Okay, now I'm just making a whole lot of.
I don't know. I don't remember other than. I don't know. I actually don't remember.
What position did he play? What was his batting average?
Yeah, I was going to say. I mean, what was my batting average? Don't want to share.
Well, probably shoot, the Mendoza line. We'll go with that.
I've been wanting to drop hints to you during the second segment because I'm going to tell you what our next song spotlight episode is.
Yes.
And I kind of could not find a way to drop hints also because I'm kind of stuck between two songs. So okay. I'm going to give you a nice choice on the other end of this commercial break.
Sounds good. And we'll also give our kind of pointless ratings.
Totally in the pocket. I got it. Out of 100?
Why change now?
DJ Brood is happy to bring you a proper session of music listening at the beginning of every week on Twitch. With rotating themes showcasing new music, hits of the past, and specific genres, there is most definitely something for everyone to enjoy. Tune in every Monday from 5 to 8 p.m. Pacific Time as he broadcasts nothing but musical goodness live from the comfort of his home to the comfort of yours. Bedroom Radio, where there are no Monday blues, just Monday vibes. What happens when you get a bunch of obsessive music lovers sitting around a table and talking about every aspect in music? You get the Untitled Mixtape. Join Dango, Lewis, and Lorenzo in this educational but enjoyable podcast that encourages everyone to branch out and expand what they listen to. From deep dives to letting you know what is a bop or flop, the Untitled Mixtape boys are sure to take care of your music needs every Wednesday on your favorite podcast platform. The Untitled Mixtape, a Bassblown Entertainment podcast.
All right, here we are. Third segment is where we get our closing notes in, and we all get to kind of kumbaya this. We're gonna
bring ourselves together.
Yes.
Right. The clock, the second hand, it's ticking down.
It is.
Well, I'm gonna let you, our leader.
I knew you were gonna. I don't know if you noticed. First. You always make me do the ratings first.
See, that's not true. Okay, go back to discography episodes. I would usually go first.
Well, shady 80s.
Shady 80s.
Well, it's,
you know what? I'm gonna take a stance here. I'm gonna go. I was listening to some of our previous ones. In fact, I was just listening to our Monster Mash episode.
Okay.
We had a very interesting discussion during the Monster Mash episode. I was trying to explain why I felt the song. I think I gave it something insane. Like I gave it like a 90 out of 100. And I said, I literally can't think of anything wrong with this song. And it's bothering me because, and you made the distinction. You said, I will give it a 90 for if we clarify that that is only for novelty songs.
And that's, interesting. I thought you were the one who created that distinction for us.
You brought it up. And the only reason is because I was making the argument that Monster Mash lyrically was a better song than My Girl, which at the time upset you. And today, I don't think it has any effect on you whatsoever. You seem perfectly fine.
I'm just totally content.
I can imagine. That's great. So
yeah,
you came in with that. I don't think I jived with that idea. And so here I am trying to see where I fall in this, because if I'm going to try to rate this in a scale that we have rated other songs out of 100, it's going to be significantly lower because as ably as I think the song's put together, it also means nothing and is nothing.
I get what you're saying.
I think this is like my kind of weird freak out in the middle of this episode where I was like, I don't know. It's because that's where I usually land with like the best pop song I can think of is still emotionally kind of bankrupt in a way that it's just not. Like, I don't interact with music in that way.
You know I mean? Can kind of see what you mean. I think my to kind of piggyback what you're saying, it kind of feels like pop when it comes to kind of a lyrical or a poetic side, it's always going to be kind of on the back burner of conveying like real visceral emotions.
In some level, right? And it's
it feels like it's oversimplifying.
And I think it's where I land with movies too, where I think at a certain level, I just want to be challenged in a way. Like, mm-hmm. And no matter what way it feels like it is, like if it's emotionally challenging me, if it's like something, right? And this is coming across, I know, as the most like old dude in a record store thing you could say. It's just weird to talk about pop music now. It just used to be so accepted to everyone that pop was trash and trashy in a way that is not like, oh, it's bad. It's just trashy mm-hmm. is its own genre. It's like watching, I don't watch a reality show like Survivor and go, but come on, Survivor. Like mm-hmm. we're not having a deep conversation about, and yet it's a huge song. So all of this, 65? Mm-hmm.
You know what? I'm kind of in the same category to where, like, if I was going off of country music, cause to go with you and the movie idea, I'm more of a, I watch comedies all the time. But if somebody asks me my favorite movies, then I'm dropping in, like, The Prestige. You know, I'm dropping in Shawshank Redemption. I'm not going comedy. I'm going with something that, like, has something that, like, emotionally moves me or has, like, elements of kind of darker edge. So I kind of feel the same way with music. So if I'm going with this song in the 90s pop country, I'll go. It's going to be somewhere between 85 and 90. It's a good pop country song. I'm all in. But like for it to be music overall, it's going to be hard for it to hit like the 70s for me. So I'll go 69. Now I know everybody.
There's nothing. I know.
I'm, but I mean like it's coming up on 70.
I thought it's because we're so close to 420 and also your birthday.
There we go. Yeah. But I mean,
I'm not going to see you on your birthday. Happy birthday.
Yeah. And by the time this episode comes out, we will not be the same age anymore.
It's been a nice ride, man.
It's been a nice month.
But I'm with you. And it's also hard.
Yeah. It's just coming right to that point to where it's like, I think it is a really good song in general. I think it's a good song, but is it game changing? No, I can't put it in the 70s.
And I also do at the same time think if we were doing like a top 10 pop country songs from the 90s, I don't think this goes in the top 10 for me. Like top 20, I don't know. I don't want to get like too in the weeds with this, but I think it's similar to like discussions we've had with Dylan and the Beatles and like mm-hmm. the people that are like the upper ranges of this list we've been compiling now. I think weirdly enough, I don't think we've done a song from an artist where I've thought to myself, this is the best. To me, this is their best song. Like, I think that's just the nature of, you know, this format too, which is a good, I like it that way. But I don't think this is my favorite Shania Twain song, but I also don't think it's like, I don't think it's the best the genre has to offer. If I really believe that, if I was like, this is just pop country excellence, man. Like, honestly, if we were doing like a chick song, there's some really good, like Wide Open Spaces.
Good, man, good song.
That's pushing 80 for me. Like, that's a good ass song. Like, I think it is. I think it's the pop of it all that that makes like, I think there's a country pop spectrum continuum that this song falls on the wrong side of for me. And the fact that it is a harbinger of the Taylor Swift of the world.
Mm-hmm. Honestly, like just Shania Twain in general, I'd probably give it. Let me not say the statement I was going to say. Jesus, not my intention. But she kind of just as an artist kind of fits within this particular mold. Let's just move
on. I love you, man. I love you so too, much.
Buddy.
I love you. Okay, can I give you my quick rating Man, I Feel Like a Woman?
Absolutely.
35. I hate 35. That song. That song's bad, man. I don't like that song.
I don't know for sure, but just to be a contrarian, I'm going to give it a 98.
That's fair. That's so fair. I love you.
That riff. Bam, bam, da, down, oh, bam, bam.
See, let's and go, you expect ladies. It to be guitar heavy, and it's that awful loud house synth that's so loud in the mix. And it's like, honestly, it's like if you're a garage band and you're like diddling around trying to find the right effect for something, and you hit that and you hit it once on your keyboard and you go, imagine a song with that obnoxious sound. It's insane. Yeah. And then you hear Feel Like a Woman, you're like, oh, they went with that one. They
rolled with it, yeah.
It's like when you're messing on the keyboard and you get the cat sound, like meow, meow. And you're like, what if I just did a whole song like that? And they did the gall. So I am prepared now to give you our next song. And I actually have two in the chamber. I'm going to hold off on one.
Okay.
Even though I was very excited to talk about it with you.
There's still plenty of episodes to come.
I know. In fact, I was the one I was going to do. I dropped a hint earlier in this segment. And I've since then decided it didn't feel right. I don't want to do it.
Oh, okay. Okay.
If you go back and listen, there's something I'm going to say that's like weirdly out of what we're doing. And then you're like, oh, so that's like, that's a hint from like four episodes in the future. I am Christopher Nolan, this thing.
All right.
I'm going to tell you this. This is a song from the 2000s.
Okay.
From this song, there was created a new word that people use now. Even if they don't even know the song, they have used this phrase. I mean, the word existed, but not in the usage that this song invented.
Ooh, okay.
It is an artist we have talked about on this podcast a lot. We both, like it or not, I think, have been influenced by this artist.
Are those just like, am I supposed
I'm
to
giving
guess
you
off
like
of that?
I'm setting the table. I'm seeing if I'm going to spark anything. This is a song that's iconic enough where I'm trying to be careful with the hints. I want drama.
Okay. I'll give you drama.
Letters.
I feel like I should probably get it off of that, but let's move on.
Phil Collins.
I mean, is it a Phil Collins song?
It is not a Phil Collins song.
So is it Stan?
Yes, it is.
Okay, there we go. All right, that'll be a fun one. I like this.
I'm going to proceed something you're going to ask me when we do this episode in the future, which is why this. And I'm just telling you now, I don't know.
It is, you know what? It kind of fits a format because I said that I had another song that I was like, it's a huge song that gets talked about all the time. I think Stan is a huge song. It was a moment in music history, like especially during our time. Like that song was humongous. I'm going to look right now. I bet it's his number one.
It would shock me if it wasn't. Although I wonder if
could
like
be something newer now,
Real Some Shady or some of those ones managed to be. I mean, he always came out with the single was always the worst one. The first single was like the obnoxious MTV music video, and then he would come out with the darker stuff after.
Dude, it's actually crazy. It's not even close to the number one.
I don't know if I would have guessed it was.
I don't think you would have guessed a lot of the songs in between Stan and number one. Like
number one on Marshall Mathers LP though?
No.
Eminem Show?
Oh, yeah.
Not it's White America.
Hit. It's the when it feels so empty without me. Yeah. That's, and you know what? The Monster, that makes sense.
There's probably some other weird stuff like that Rihanna song
and actually looking at it now, number three on the list, I should have guessed would have been number one was Lose Yourself.
Oh shoot! Yeah. Okay, man.
But Stan, we're not doing any.
We're not
of those.
Doing any of those. We're doing Stan.
We're doing.
And
Stan.
I think also it's because I just started to rap the first verse because I know this song by heart. And
oh yeah.
I don't know why. I know almost the entirety of Marshall Mathers LP by heart. I haven't listened to it in quite
I know.
Some time.
Oh, same here. But that's going to be an interesting conversation. I'm looking forward to how we break down and dissect that song.
And it's also, I think, kind of a twofer because it also just allows us to talk about the Dido song, which I think is really, really good.
I really like that song. I like a lot of Dido songs.
Yeah, I
okay, and not so a lot. I like a few Dido songs.
It's the ultimate like rep thing where I'm like, hey, I own No Angel. Like I own that record. Do you own No Angel? That's how much I like Dido. Yeah. But
I listened to it. My sister, I believe, had that.
It's White Flag is a good song. Anywho.
It is. That's a really, really good song.
Buddy, excellent. Good job. We are back in the pocket.
That's right. And you know what? That's two episodes. Knocking on wood. Internet's holding up.
I want to say something else, which is this is my 22nd thing, if everyone's keeping track. I believe the next time that we record, I will be in my new place. So if you want to take one last look.
Bye, door. I hope the telescope will be in the background.
It will likely be in the background. I don't even know how the setup's going to look, but we'll be in a new place. And I hopefully will sound less like I do right now.
You got room for 3 more points. We'll see.
Okay. No, I had something. What was it? I thought of like 3 things that upset me. Wait, I had it.
Come on, you can do it.
The Justin Bieber Coachella set, I thought was kind of good. I like that he just played YouTube videos.
I didn't watch any of the Coachella.
I hate Coachella. Coachella's become weird.
Yeah. Oh my God, the music's coming louder.